Okay, we're back for episode 149. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, it's been an interesting week. We're approaching the weekend. Weather's getting very warm, particularly out there in California, but also up in New England and Maine, and I understand also in Michigan and in Ohio. Lots of protests. The peasants are stirring. So there's signs of resistance. I saw they were COVID-related government restriction protests were spreading. Apparently, this was the Washington Post. Protests against COVID-related government restrictions continued to spread on Friday as coalition of gun activists, vaccine opponents, and anxious business owners, that's a motley crew but effective, I suppose, used the organizing power of social media to build increasingly visible and vocal opposition movement in several states, crowds waving signs, honking horns, and demanding an immediate relaxation of measures imposed to slow the pandemic gathered in Chicago, Raleigh, Los Angeles, Sacramento on Friday. Geographically, that's pretty much kind of the entire country, I think. North Carolina, Midwest, Chicago, Los Angeles. Yeah, it's the... I also understand in Maine, too, so it's the East Coast. More protests were planned for the weekend, including the state capital of Kentucky, Oregon, and New Hampshire, despite polling consistently showing that most Americans support public health restrictions by governors and mayors, even as the economic toll mounts. Yeah, right. And we had this interesting case in Michigan where Trump tweeted support to the protesters. It's kind of tepid. He told Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan governor, to give a little and put out the fire. Political advice, I suppose. Hundreds of protesters gathered at the Capitol in Lansing on Thursday, urging an end to Michigan's state of emergency. At one point, a large group, some with flags slung over their shoulder, massed in the lobby outside the House chamber and yelled at the Michigan State Police troopers and House sergeants demanding to be allowed onto the House floor. Ooh, I like that. Many of the demonstrators wore Trump hats, carried a it's political, and Trump and other paraphernalia related to his campaign, so they're trying to sort of turn it into a partisan thing, I suppose, at least the coverage is. I don't know how many wore it. I mean, I guess they're always going to show up. The governor of Michigan should give a little and put out the fire, Trump said on Twitter. They're very good people, but they are angry, and they want their lives back safely. See them, talk to them, and make a deal. And also, I saw this report. Michigan governor extends state of emergency order despite Trump tweeting back protesters. Michigan governor Gretchen Whitmer pushed forward with her state's emergency order last Thursday despite opposition from state leaders, protesters who rallied inside the state capitol, and the president. Whitmer signed a series of executive orders hours before the state of emergency was set to expire on April 30th and extended to May 28th, citing the growing number of cases, and deaths in the state from disease. By refusing to extend the emergency and disaster declaration, Republican lawmakers are putting their heads in the sand and putting more lives and livelihood at risk. I'm not going to let that happen, she said in a statement. The Republican-controlled Senate state legislature voted along party lines Thursday not to extend her initial order, citing cost on the economy. Senate Majority Leader Mark Shirky acknowledged the pandemic's toll on the state, but argued that decisions on handling the virus shouldn't be made by one person. The end of the governor's emergency declaration means we return to a system of checks and balances that ensures all voices are heard. It also means the legislature must vote to ensure continuity of other necessary changes made via executive order, he said during the hearing. The vote came after 400 to 700 protesters, some of whom were armed and allegedly part of militias, entered the state capitol building and crowded the halls. The protesters, some of whom were not wearing face coverings, demanded to be led into the hearing and screamed in the faces of officers who blocked them from entering the chamber. Out in California, reopen California's protests demand Governor Newsom lift COVID-19 restrictions held on Sacramento. Despite their urges to reopen California as quickly as possible, organizers seem to at least acknowledge that there's a health risk, not to mention the violation of it's the wrong paragraph. Where is this? A group urging attendees to create a poster board signed with a variety of verbiages, suggesting to include freedom, we the people, open our churches, the shutdown is killing us, practice media distancing, not sure what what to chant. They have suggestions for that too. Open our state now and back to school. Protesters were planning to gather in San Diego and Los Angeles all at the same time as Governor Newsom's daily news briefing on the novel coronavirus. Governor Newsom has repeatedly said he's feeling the pressure to reopen the state more quickly, but he's still leaning on scientific data to decide on timing. Politics will not drive our decision-making. Protests will not drive our decision-making. Political pressure will not drive our decision-making, said Governor Newsom. The science, the data, and public health will drive our decision-making. Well, and also they're having the governor out in Maine is having trouble. The restaurants are opening. One opened in his bar and grill, and he immediately had his liquor license pulled. But the people are still lining up, reportedly, to patronize his business. Maine is interesting because Maine, I think, has reportedly, I don't know, like 50 deaths. And
No, 33.
Well, I think total, and they claim 50 deaths since the thing began, and there's 33 in the hospital. And okay, for that, sorry, she wants to shut down.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, 33. Right.
This is a state of like 1.8 million people or something, a big tourist industry in the spring. She wants to keep it shut down. So they're getting restless. Maine Governor's Janet Mills, that's her name. And it was the Sunday River Brewing Company. Defies coronavirus restriction order. She withdrew the liquor license, but he's still open. Rick Sivers, the owner of Sunday River Brewing Company in Bethel, kept his word and opened his doors to the public on Friday, defying Governor Janet Mills' executive order during the coronavirus COVID-19 panic. According to Savage, health and liquor license inspectors were on the scene Friday and revoked both the restaurant's licenses. Despite this, Savage says he will continue to operate. Oxford County Sheriff's Chief Deputy James Urquhart said News Center Maine several agencies are also monitoring the situation, as well as surrounding areas that they may try to mimic what's been attempted in Bethel. So basically, they don't want people copying. They don't want this rebellion going viral. Savage went on Fox News Thursday night telling his nation he planned to go against the governor's orders and open the dine-in customers on Friday. Hundreds showed up in support. So if that happens all over the state, it's the orders would just go away, I suppose, because how do you enforce it? So good signs of life, right, Joe?
Signs of life and also signs of death. I had some information on our local area's mortality from COVID, and I wanted to share it with everyone and with you. And to do justice to it, I just thought that I would point out I had been an altar boy at St. Lawrence Martyr in Torrance, California in the 1950s, and I would often do funeral masses. And I don't know if you ever attended one of these, but there is typically the most solemn organ music playing imaginable. I mean, it just moves your heart into gravity. And the music would play during these masses. And I just want everyone in the audience to see if they can conjure up the organ music while I read our summation of mortality here in the Tri-Counties. Excuse me. That's not the organ music. That was my phone. So going back, wrecking the mood. So you have the organ music playing. Here's our summation. We had a 90-year, there was three fatalities. There was a 90-year-old person who had underlying medical conditions are defined as a medical condition that leads you directly to death. Okay. Now, the fact is that, hold on a second. I don't know why I didn't turn it off. Anyway, so that was the 90-year-old. The second one was a 99-year-old person who also had underlying medical condition, 99 years old. But it was the third one that caught my eye most, attentively. Now, the third fatality was young, was only 37 years old, but had underlying medical conditions. And Tim, guess what this was? The underlying medical condition was that he had died the day before of a drug overdose.
I'm not laughing at his death. I'm just laughing.
Not a word of exaggeration. He had died the day before. They did the autopsy and somehow determined that he may have exposure to COVID. So they listed him as a COVID fatality with the underlying medical condition of having been dead for a day. So there you have it. Those are the three fatalities. You have 99-year-old and a day-old corpse. Now,
Joe, why would they want to pad the mortality numbers? I don't understand. Now, why would the government want to put us in such a heightened state of fear and anxiety?
Why indeed? Isn't that something that they would want to do that? Well, I guess it's because it has to do with slave training. You know, is that they want to keep us with our masks on and then, you know, distance apart so we don't talk to one another. And they need the rationale, and these numbers are the rationale.
Well, we have to stay 6 feet apart, so drug addicts who die the day before don't drive COVID-19.
I guess not. But, I mean, the thing is, if you took out New York and New Jersey from the U.S.'s number, I mean, this thing isn't even the flu.
Right? No,
I mean, where the mortalities are going on. And so if I was a New Yorker, I would really be careful about going into a hospital right now. I mean, I this is not a doctor, can't give medical advice, but I don't know if you saw the YouTube videos of the nurses who are, you know, asserting that there is not, real medical care going on. And that some people, they made the assertion that that people are just being left to die. I mean, I think that, you know, when you're getting so much money for each COVID death, it's obviously there's an incentive to, you know, to rack up a body count. And so, you know, it's pretty grim thought. It's hard to really imagine how evil that might be, but you know, Tim, if I was going to go into a hospital or had a loved one who was going to go into a New York hospital, man, I would make sure that person had an advocate, someone who wasn't in the, in the medical industry that was there to make sure there was normal, actual beneficial care being given. Mm-hmm. So it's all part of our, relationship to technocracy, isn't it? You know, we just get used to these experts giving us instructions on how to live.
Yeah, last week we went into the relationships between some of these institutions that are advising governments on how to respond to this alleged pandemic. You know, one, we made the connections between, and this has been written about by many now, is the connection between the London Imperial College, Neil Ferguson, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and also Gavi. And same thing, connection between Fauci himself and Gates. He's being funded by Gates. He's on the board of a Gates organization. You also talk about, I talked about how out in Oregon, institute for, what was it? The Institute for Disease Modeling. Research, which guided the Oregon's response to the pandemic. Of course, that was they recommended complete lockdown to flatten the curve, prevent the disease from spreading. And of course, I detailed how many people, virtually all the authors of the study, which resulted in the government shutdown, all have direct links to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And you can also find a similar thing with the state of New York, state of Washington, even the White House. Lawrence Kudlow is relying on research based on an organization tied to Bill and Melinda Gates. Foundation funding. Duke University has, has been in on this. Of course, MIT. Basically, the experts that we're told to listen to are all on the payroll of this oligarch, and that's really the true face of technocracy. And of course, what they've done is, and like study at the Imperial College in London, we've talked about how it predicted 2 million dead in the United States, 500,000 dead in the UK if nothing was done, recommending immediate shutdown. So they got the economic lockdown, or the economy was shut down for the past 7 weeks. This causes the economic crash. And now you have tens of millions of unemployed. Now we're told that we cannot reemerge and we must accept a new normal under the terms that Bill Gates finds acceptable, apparently. And one of those terms are a sort of a technocratic slave state. Basically, it's a technocracy supposedly governed by experts and scientists. But the reality, these experts and scientists are on the payroll, of the usual suspects, the oligarchs. Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Bill Gates, Soros, that crowd. What they're proposing is in a response to this virus, because they've set up a sort of a narrative where of this virus is ever present. It's a continuing situation. It's like terrorism. It's never going to end. You're declaring a war on a virus is like declaring a war on terrorism. It never ends, and it's not really there. It's kind of like it's elusive. It's not, you can't see it. You can't even know when you want it. We've been told that by Fauci that there's going to be a second wave. Also by Gates, a second wave and a third wave and a fourth wave. And based on their standards, they can always be it, because all you have to do is show that somewhere, someplace, someone is having a group of people or a cluster of people are having a respiratory illnesses or distress, and they can ascribe it to a novel virus. And it could be COVID 20, 21, 22, 23. And yet they propose a vaccine for a coronavirus, which is, more or less the common cold. And we know that there is no cure for the common cold because the virus mutates rapidly. So you never really get immunity from it. This is why you have a cold. In an average lifespan, someone will have a cold 200 times. They're never cured from it. So, yet they're proposing a vaccine, which presumably people have to get every year. So it's annual flu vaccine, Bill Gates whiz-bang vaccine every year. And that's great recurring revenue for the pharmaceutical industry, because you roughly 7 billion people on the planet. Of course, after I think when they're said and done, there'd be a lot less people on the planet. But it looks like it's a scheme for recurring revenue. We're also been told that in order to sort of police the situation, to fight this dreaded virus, that we have to submit ourselves to constant surveillance. They're calling it contact tracing. And this is done with our whiz-bang smartphones and apps that can be downloaded either with the phone, or they can send it to your phone, and this will report where you are, and it will tell you if you're near someone who has tested positive. Of course, presume everyone has tested, whether they're healthy, asymptomatic or not, right? Everyone gets tested, and then of course this will give us our immunity passports that Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates are talking about, and Bill Gates is up the ante. He says we need not. It's not just a paper passport; it's a special tattoo that records the vaccine electronically. It can be read by our smartphone. His idea is for everyone to have this, in order for us to have some semblance of a normal life, to regain our rights to go to church, engage in commerce, and live, get employed, whatever, to be employed. This is the terms they are setting. I don't know who they think they are, because no one ever granted them that power. But Bill Gates somehow is the go-to guy on this, magically. And we've done Bill Gates and why that is, because Bill Gates has invested heavily in the world. He has pledged $10 billion to the World Health Organization, so he's bought that. People don't realize this, but the CDC, although it is a nominal government agency, it is mostly funded by private donors. One of the biggest ones is Bill Gates. Others are the big pharmaceutical companies, of which Bill Gates is heavily invested. And it's also a lot of the stuff, Bill Gates has also patented the coronavirus, And he's set to make a lot of money producing a vaccine. So the reason why we're put in a heightened state of fear is because only get people to accept a mandatory vaccine or a quote a voluntary vaccine, voluntary. Yeah, if you don't get it, you can't eat. Is you create this fear, constant fear of a deadly virus that's ever present, always there. By creating that fear, they're creating the political conditions where they can impose what is, all intents and purposes, a technocracy, a technocratic control grid of full surveillance, monitoring, mandatory vaccines, the doing away with cash. So now we're moving towards a social credit system. So if you don't behave, you can be denied social credits. You can get social debits, and you'll be cut out of the system. So that's what we mean by what they are proposing. Now it's out in the open. It's the beast is there before us. They in order for us to return to normal or to emerge into the new normal, we have to submit to a technocracy. And if people want, what is a technocracy? Well, technocracy is itself is an ideology that suggests a form of government where a government is run by experts, not elected politicians. These experts are basically are ideally they're chosen because they're high intellect and skill and their specialization or their expertise, of course. But we know politics is a messier game than that. And what we've demonstrated is that although we look at Fauci and Birx and the folks at WHO or NIH, or we look at them as experts, even though we even Gates, although Gates doesn't have a college degree, I guess he thinks he's a technocrat. Well, it's funny because Gates is funding the experts. So basically, the same way that often democracy is just a front for oligarchy, well, technocracy is just a thinner veil for oligarchy. And basically, it supplants rule of self-government, constitutional law, for a rule of experts who rely on, I guess, their ability to collect data and rationally calculate the right inputs and outputs in a society to determine what decision we could make. It became popular in the 1930s because of the Great Depression. It was always kind of crackpot, and it just fell out of favor. World War II came along, and the post-war boom, but it was picked up again in the 1970s by David Rockefeller, particularly when he eyed Zbigniew Brzezinski. He kind of liked the cut of his jib. Zbigniew Brzezinski was talking about, killing a lot of people and controlling the world, and David Rockefeller said, "I like you, boy." And he picked him to run the Trilateral Commission. And the Trilateral Commission would implement technocracy gradually. And technocracy itself was developed gradually over the years. The development, I mean, you get into this with the development of computers and the internet. So that became the technical basis for it. Because basically, what always held it back was they didn't have the monitoring and control systems when the economy, I mean, when the society didn't have computers. The perfection or improvement of computers allowed for the practical, I guess, development and also application of technocracy, and you just need an excuse like a crisis or something. There's also was the Trilateral Commission has played a big role in sort of the development of China economically. And after Mao's death in 1976, this started happening in the late 70s, picked up in the late 80s, 90s, and that's when you had the outsourcing of much of the West industrial output to Asia, particularly China. And China, along with developing this mass production capacity, developed these so-called smart cities and these things. So people was wondering why you had all these smart cities. Well, the smart cities were being built for some sort of planned mass migration or forced movement of people into these cities. And people look at technocracy now. China is a great example of a technocracy. There, where people are they're under full surveillance. They have a social credit system. And what was interesting about this pandemic is one of the things that what we noticed was that during the pandemic, China's allegedly, reportedly harsh measures, locking down cities, and their response was praised by many people as a proper way to. I think the Atlantic Magazine has an article about how the model for the West is now China. Actually, there's an article in the recent edition of the Atlantic Magazine saying that's the model. Of course, David Rockefeller always loved the idea of the China model. He loved Mao, and Mao was necessary pro, you know, was necessary for up, you know, for rapid, for drastically changing Chinese culture, ushering it into this era. a lot of the crimes of Mao, the 60 million dead, the Great Cultural Revolution, the Great Leap Forward, these were considered necessary by men like David Rockefeller to bring China to the point where it is today. You have to break a few eggs to make an omelet, as I guess you could say. But this was the development of sort of legitimization of the sort of this technology 2.0 were now being supplied to the West, because with the development of Silicon Valley, the internet, computers, the Internet of Things, this is why 5G comes into play here, because in order for the Internet of Things and full monitoring of everything, they need this 5G, regardless of what it does to our health. So that's kind of, I'm kind of rambling, but I hope that kind of what technology is. And now we have a crisis to justify its overt imposition on the people. Basically, it's technocracy brought through a medical martial law because of this so-called pandemic that we're experiencing. And you can only bring that in by shutting down the economy, make everyone desperate, because with everyone desperate to go back to work, you make a condition for to returning back to some semblance of a normal life, although we're told it's the new normal. So I think I've said it enough now.
Well said. Okay. I think it's important to actually have the term understood by the public. Mm-hmm. Because in order to resist this, we have to basically have, as to the extent, large extent that is possible, a single voice. And so we need a single vocabulary, a single grammar. You know, you mentioned that there was, militia groups, and there were also business groups, right? Now, that's an unusual combination in Michigan that occurred today, and that's a great combination. That's exactly what we want. And it would be nice to have them all speaking the same thing, because if they don't, if their grammar is separate, then they're easier to splinter. And I'm sure that would be one of the things that they would like to see done, is to, pull apart those two groups. Well, a technocracy is, it's just something that people can understand that's evil. It's easy to understand. It's a subversion of democracy. That's what the word is, right? You replace democracy with unelected representatives whose expertise in technology will enable them to make decisions that are more precise, right? So there is actually a functioning technocracy right now, which is the EU Commission. It's unelected, and it's actually defined in some of its paperwork as basically a technocracy, that the people are appointed because of technical capacity, and this is supposed to enable them to make better decisions. I mean, this is of course ludicrous, because the EU is just it looks like it was designed to fail and destroy the European. That's how bad the technocracy is, and that isn't to be unexpected, because the technocracy are established by the oligarchs, right? I mean, that's the only way basically one could ever come into existence. And therefore, they're really set up to create sophistry so people don't feel bad about losing democracy. And that's really why the term is good. And it would be, I think, a useful term to be widely understood in the United States right now, because we want to lump the evil that is organized against us into a single word, or as few words as possible, so that everyone understands what is happening just by the use of the word, right? We just want people to know that, Bill Gates is in a group. They want to get rid of democratic process. They claim to have some technical expertise, but we don't want to give up our democratic process. We don't want to have technical experts, so-called, basically replace our rule of law, which is exactly what's happened in this pandemic, so-called. I mean, in Newsom's language, I mean, this is hilarious, right? He spoke back to the protesters saying, we're just using science here. Science is just a god, basically, that's making these decisions. He doesn't define what the process is, but you have to go back just 2 months to when Newsom made his scientific projection about the state of California. And he said, we're going to have 25 million infected by May 1st. That's today. Well, he was off. Science somehow failed. And even though I would say we have about 2,500 in the entire state so-called fatalities, and I gave a list at the beginning of the show so you can see the quality of our dead. And,
well, it's not an exact science.
No, it's not an exact science because we've got 40 million people and just over 2,000 people dead. So somehow the 25 million infected and, you know, the body count that just through the roof. I mean, this just completely collapsed. But there isn't any discussion on his part about the failure of science. Right. So you can see just in this little vignette of Newsom, he has the fear porn of this huge number and this catastrophe. He has science as the reason he's going to lock us down. Science. Now the science has failed. We're 60 plus days into it. The science, everything was just ludicrous. But there is no discussion about the failure of science. It's just the opposite. He says that science is succeeding. And we will only exit your enslavement if science tells us that it's the right thing to do, basically. Now,
And apparently an executive order is not political, but the people rising up or having a protest, that's political.
Exactly, yeah. when he gives the executive order, this is science, and then when we complain, it's...
It's petty politics.
Yeah, this is petty politics and just emotional bitterness, you know.
Dollars over lives.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So it was yesterday morning, the report that was circulating everywhere that Newsom was shutting down all the California beaches. He had a fit of pique after the photographs came out of the crowds last weekend. And they were just, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, typical sunny day in California, Southern California, just people everywhere. So Newsom had a hissy fit, and he said he actually sent out an order to all of the sheriffs saying, you know, we're shutting down all of the beaches. They're all getting shut down. No more beach access. State beaches are shut down. Well, it didn't work because I can just tell you here in our little community, there was some political communication. I have no idea what it was, but the end result was they just said to Newsom, well, no. We're not going to shut down our beaches. We've actually observed them, and we think they're perfectly safe. To say nothing of the fact that we're, 70 days into this pandemic here in Santa Barbara, and we haven't had a healthy person pass away yet, right? So science isn't working out too well for us in terms of the fear porn. Now, there was also a report today which really, I think, basically sheds light on the sophistry that the technocrats, the technocracy is using. That was from the BBC, and they pointed out that half of the world's employment will go away as a result of this maneuver. Half. That was their number. And they mentioned in the article, the reporter says, you know, if you don't work, and these are mostly poor people, they might not be able to eat. So this was the first time I'd seen the mass starvation concept. It wasn't completely overt, but it was there in the article. The guy was pointing out, hey, this is possible. So now you can see where science has taken us. And you can see that the idea that the lockdown and the end of the economic activity, it was done to help people is, this is just a lie. It's just a crude cover story. And what this is really for is depopulation.
So much for saving lives, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're going to say, well, gee, it's just an absolute shock to us. This is
this is obvious from day one that if you shut down the economy, you're going to, any lengthy period of time, you're going to have the human costs are going to be immense because the economy is there to support life.
And remember, when you had the Imperial College technocratic model given to us with the fear porn to justify these insane lockdown procedures. Nowhere in the model was the graph which shows the increase in starvation. Somehow that data point doesn't enter into the model. they don't ever give a model of where, okay, well, here we go. We're locking you down. Here's the virus that's coming in. But if we social distance, look, the steepness of the curve is flattening. But they should have another graph that's overlaid, which is the steepness of the starvation curve.
Well, you just increase migration into Europe and North America from these trouble spots. They're called trouble spots.
If they have the strength to make it. I mean, most of the people in India and the Middle East and Africa who are so-called have food insecurity, which, I mean, the numbers are, was it like 2 billion, I think, they are close to starvation all the time. Mm-hmm. You pull the plug on a couple hundred calories a day and it's lights out. They'll never make it to Europe because the vultures will pick their bones apart long before they even get out of their continent. There will be mass migration, but it'll be of the middle class from these regions. They'll be getting the social unrest will just, I mean, when you start having a world famine, the idea of social unrest, that is the new normal, Tim. The new normal is shooting your way out of your house to get to your beehive to collect honey.
Yeah, I don't think they're shocked by this at all because it's anyone can see this is the direct result of economic shutdown.
Exactly. And since that wasn't in the analysis from the very beginning given to the public, this should expose the truth of the motivation behind the technocrats and the oligarchs to the public. And this is the one bright light that we have right now, is that now the starvation agenda will start to come front and center. And I don't know if you recall back, I mean, it was a couple months ago we did a show and we talked about this, that this seemed like this was really the purpose all along, and that, you know, we would start to see this pretty quickly if in fact that was the case, and if nothing was done to get the economy, you know, back up. And so I think all they have to do now is keep the economy underwater for about 30 more days. If they can do that, lights out, because it takes so long, and it's never been done, but the models that I have seen indicate maybe two or three times the length of time will be needed even to get back up to 70 or 80% of the economic activity. Well, that's too long of a time. The food chain is broken. The food insecure are now the starving certain, and you have an end to the economy, because just take for an example like Nairobi, you know, place in Africa that has a lot of so-called food insecurity. When you subtract, you know, 30 or 40% of the economic activity, you're going to definitely lose a large fraction of the food. Now, at that point, there isn't really any way to stop starvation on a mass scale. Now, at that point, what do you think is going to happen to the economic recovery, right? When you have like a third of the people starving, there isn't going to be any economic recovery because there's going to be just chaos in the streets, right? So now the economic recovery is actually just part of the process. It goes to zero because that's where this goes. This goes to a place where you cannot recover economically. Because once the starvation comes, once the food insecure become the starvation certain, you will never, ever get those economies to work again. It may take 100 years, Tim, because there won't be anything, because it's a spiral down. You see, once you have the poor rioting and the middle class are using weapons to hoard their remaining food, that's the only activity that's going to be taking place. The idea of stores opening up, currency being exchanged, the economy spiraling back up, it's just not possible. Without food? Are you kidding me? So this is what they've envisioned all along. And that's why, in the United States, we need to protest with great vigor because, for one thing, we don't want to become part of the starvation fad that's about to hit the planet. But moreover, the faster that we can transition back into an economic reality, the quicker that we can hopefully, you know, return our culture to some kind of normalcy and then start making political changes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this isn't, if you look back at history, at least recent history, most famines have been political, you know, man-created, you know, whether it's Ukraine in the 1930s, Cambodia in the late 1970s. And, of course, we an example would be in the 1970s, Henry Kissinger's National Security Study Memorandum 200, which called for the exploitation of food insecurity to throttle the growth of third world nations, to keep the population low and also to decrease pressure on natural resources. So the plan was to spread human misery and suffering for the purposes of national security. So that this is the type of the moral framework that they operate under. You know, you heard of reports, I started hearing reports in here in the United States about the disruption of agriculture with labor and also with the some meat processing plants being shut down because of the virus. So that's being floated out there as a justification for shortages, and the shortages are being introduced the same reason why they're making it inconvenient to shop and going through this sort of this humiliation ritual, having to wear a mask or queue up and follow lines in the stores. All this stuff is geared towards sort of cowing and also humiliating, getting people used to shortages. And so, like, you know, like, as I think you suggested, the United States isn't immune to this. The obvious, if you keep economic activity if you prevent economic activity, you're going to disrupt the food supply chain all the way back to the farm, the agriculture sector, because that's where food originates. People don't realize that. It's not the grocery store. It's the farm. Places like Michigan or some of the agricultural states where people are prevented from doing their seasonal work because of the lockdown, that can have a profound effect on the crop in the fall and the harvest. And a few months later, you're going to have these food shortages, and they'll be blaming somebody else when that happens. They'll say, what? They'll blame it on Donald Trump or something like, I don't know. But it's the consequences of the economic shutdown that's occurring now because you're disrupting all these things. And you're also disrupting all these alternative sources of food, locally owned restaurants and farmers markets and the whole supply chain is based on the presumption that these businesses exist, and you've wiped away all these businesses, and some of these people are just going to walk away, and the food won't be produced anymore. You know, you've heard reports about food being thrown away because there's no market for it now, in the midst of a food shortage. That's the type of sort of insanity you get in a situation like this. And at the same time, the people on top, the elites, aren't going to suffer at all. So that's why you can have Nancy Pelosi, showing up on a late night comedy show, showing off her $24,000 refrigerator and her $13 a pint ice cream that she prefers during the lockdown, while reports of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans queuing up at food banks because their credit cards are maxed out and they're out of money and they're unemployed and they can't buy groceries. Chris Cuomo surveying his beach house when supposedly he's under quarantine for COVID-19. getting caught.
That stuff is disgusting.
So this is the type of situation you get when you de facto, what you call it, a communist system. I don't know what you would call it, an oligarchic system.
Yeah, it's not really communist because there's no... Yeah. There's nothing for the working class that's being dispersed. I mean, it's what we have now is an oligarchic technocracy. Mm-hmm. And technocracy is, I don't know if it's too fancy a word, but it is really what we're being subjected to. It's, but getting back to your point about the food in the U.S., I mean, what's happening is that since the restaurants are not functioning, the food that was under contract, the farmers... Mm-hmm. In that food, they're not doing it. They have to. There's nowhere to sell this particular crop to, so they're just plowing them under.
Yep.
But the problem is that the U.S. in general is very food tight. I don't know what in most cities. There's 3 to 4 days worth of food inside the city at any one time. That's because there's this constant production of produce and meats that are coming into the city from the farms. Mm-hmm. But this is a finite number, and now a large fraction of them is not coming in. The restaurant food is not coming in. Mm-hmm. You're still having Trader Joe's and Costco being supplied, but not this other section. Well, that's already a large fraction of the food that feeds the public, because the restaurant people now have to go to Costco and these other big box stores to get their food. But remember, they have a very precise amount of in their food chain as well. And the farmers that have been giving to the restaurants, they can't switch gear quickly enough and start producing produce that's just now going to end up, because the cost of the whole economic structure of how to raise their crops. I mean, restaurant produce is simply more expensive than the stuff that gets sold at Costco typically.
Yeah.
And so the farmers can't just switch gears. So what that means is we're already, as a nation, to some extent, food insecure. The McDonald's COO, he released a report yesterday that he's watching the beef production, he says, hour by hour, because he says he's very worried it's going to snap, and that they're going to have to ration the glyphosate burgers, that they sell at McDonald's, which of course would not be a bad thing for the health of the population, providing they could get some food somewhere else. But I think the U.S. that we will hold out probably longer before you have from food insecure to starvation, certain process take place.
Well, this is why you're getting these.
So we're gonna get there, Tim.
This is why you have restaurant like that restaurant owner in Maine simply saying, we can't do this. We have to simply ignore the governor, and others are going to have to do it and simply ignore their governors, because the alternative is to starve to death. If you follow their orders, okay. So you're going to give me a ticket? Give me a ticket. I'm not going to pay it, because give me a ticket and I'll keep operating. And tell the officer coming. If you do this, you'll be the next starving to death.
Exactly.
Because that's what people have to realize. This is. And I like to see a situation where these governors are relegated to they're like Hitler in the bunker in April 1945, just barking out orders, commanding armies that don't exist anymore. And that I can see Gavin Newsom, looking at the map and yelling.
That is a very pleasant idea, but to get there, we really have to organize the population.
Yes.
They are confused by so many, bad data pieces that are circulating. I mean, I think it's probably true. I would wonder about that, but I'm sure that a very large fraction of the public still supports the measures, because they are simply incapable of thinking. I mean, because they're thought puppets.
Yeah, they've been softened up, and maybe that's a topic for another show, is how do we get to this point?
that's a long, sad story.
But you're right. They're frightened, and they're at least 50, a good solid 50% who are so shell-shocked that they're going to be kept. They're not going to go out and do their regular shopping.
It's just too bad. We just have to, those of us that can think, we have to just keep moving to try to defend ourselves. And I would say if you own a restaurant, because restaurants are sort of key, I think, to, they're the most visible of all the shutdown business, but any retail store is necessary to reopen, is to just do what the guy in Maine did.
Yes.
Just say, I'm opening up. I hope people will support me, because I my business is going to go under anyway. And moreover, I have the stronger moral principle. I'm not risking people. I'm trying to save them.
Yes.
They're all going to starve to death next year. If we don't get the food chain up and going, we are going to starve. We won't be enough food to feed everybody. And I have to start getting money back to my farmers to keep them in existence. Mm-hmm. So you try to make that argument. It isn't a complicated one, but it's just that, you've got the technocrats that are all fighting against it. They're all trying to spin the minds of the public to believe that, we're endangering one another by being together. But, that was kind of like the California beach scenes. I'm sure you saw the pictures,
yes.
How dense the crowd were, hundreds of thousands. I mean, this, I think, is critical in that they were just making the judgment that the fear porn wasn't as, frightening as the thought of spending a hot afternoon in their house when they could go to the beach, right?
Yeah.
So this is a sign of life, a sign of their mind is working, still working clearly. So now we have to switch them from the immediate, you know, physical uncomfortableness of a hot day to what it's going to be like when there's no food. And that's where I think you'd start having, you know, like a mass kind of movement back to like restoring the restaurants, restoring, you know, like small businesses, is that if we can just get the public to understand that the hot day is basically an equivalent of a bad day with starvation and no food, mm-hmm. and have to avoid that by recreating our own economy. And, you know, I know this is a fantasy, Tim, but I, you know, you've alluded to this concept many times. I mean, this could be a great moment where we could actually expose the oligarchs and also educate the public to take back their constitutional rights. And I'm not just talking about the right of assembly. I'm talking about the right of governance, right? Where they just get rid of these basically automatons of the oligarchs, like the Michigan governor and Gruesome Newsom. I mean, this guy is just disgusting. So this is a moment where the alt media has to keep standing up, raising his voice, trying to get the analysis out to as many people as possible. And you know, there was a county supervisor in Bakersfield last week, and he was very articulate. And he was saying, you know, this is what we're experiencing is a constitutional crisis. And it's time for all of the sovereignties. In other words, the towns, the counties, the sheriffs, mm-hmm. everyone has to stand up in opposition to what is basically the onset of fascism. Because, man, this isn't just fascism, Tim. This is technocracy with the goal of starvation. And we've really got to get people to understand that. And to take action right now against it.
Yeah, because you know what they've done is they've created and they've shut down the economy to impose an austerity. And of course, the cover is the virus. Like when they're talking about how these people, 2 billion people who are food insecure going into this, and now they've put the economy on a lockdown. And so they immediately start to starve to death. What's going to be the effect of that? And I suspect in the body of the article that they're still writing as if the virus causes this.
Yeah.
The virus didn't cause the economic shutdown. What caused the economic shutdown was the politicians taking the advice or the orders from people like Neil Ferguson at Imperial College, who was paid by Bill Gates. And Bill Gates represents this oligarchic group, which ultimate goal is the enslavement of humanity and depopulation stated.
Sure.
So this is the reality. The stock market crash, the stock market's not the economy. It has an economic effect because the economy is highly financialized and leveraged. But really what we see here is the real economy where people are actually working, providing goods and services, agricultural and industrial, the tradesmen whose economic, livelihoods have been cut off to them. And the day-to-day work that makes life possible is shut down. What do you think is going to happen? People are going to, as soon as the unemployment stops or the welfare checks run out or their savings accounts are drained or their credit cards are maxed out, they can't get anything. And then at the other end of the pipeline, the supply chain is, guess what? You can print all the money you want, but if the food's not being grown or processed or shipped out, it's not going to do any good. And one thing you learn when you're looking at this is just how important the economy is that, because through the price mechanism, buying and selling, that's where the food's dispersed, isn't central planning. You know, and you don't want someone central planning because they'll screw it up or they'll steal a whole bunch in the process, let people starve, which always happens. But they've screwed up this elaborate matrix of relationships they've messed up with their political decisions. I mean, how is it Gavin Newsom has the gall to say that his shutting down the California society isn't the political decision? You know, I love it. Well, in the sense that he wants to shut down all debate. I guess you could say he doesn't want to be political about it. He wants to be dictatorial about it. But it is, I mean, obviously it's a political decision because he's a political office holder.
Tim, notice that the more people scream the word science, the less you see them in open debate.
Yes. That's, you see that across the board. You know, yeah. It's settled science. And, you know.
It's like that Peter Hotez of the vaccine advocate, you know, mm-hmm. who he just gets on these platforms and says, well, I just don't want to debate because I don't want to give them a platform where their ideas might even be heard, right?
Who's that? Dr. Offit, Paul Offit?
Yeah.
Who I think he owns like $50 million in patents and vaccines. Yeah. And lo and behold, he's a vaccine advocate.
You know. Well, another guy that has... I don't know how popular he is. I'm on his list of email, and so I get his information. So he bugs me because I see it in the mornings when it comes in on my email stream, and I look at it. This guy, Mike Adams, the health ranger, you know, he's the one who was claiming that, you know, the virus, the COVID was creating zombies, mm-hmm. and that there were zombies in the streets. You know, I mean, it's just obvious fear porn. And he's been like saying, well, the mathematics of the people who are like wanting to end the lockdown is horrible. And, you know, there is a common error made. I don't want to go into the math of it, but it has nothing to do with the like overall reality of the numbers, which are that COVID is basically like a flu at worst. But he's saying, well, it's 56 times more deadly than the flu. You know, he's got all of these terrible numbers, which are all created through just bad. You know, he's just deliberately trying to create worst cases to scare people. But the thing is, and what it would be nice, but again, he won't. I don't think he would accept debate. But if anyone gets a chance to, like, you know, put sunlight on the guy, is just say, okay, well, what are the fatality rates that are going to occur because of the lack of economy? I mean, this question should be asked to Newsom and that Michigan governor, that piece of work in Maine, all of the people, the governors who have shut down their state's economy. Why aren't they being forced into public debate to defend what the projections are in terms of starvation as a result of no economic activity? Because it's very straightforward. It's not this is not something that is, theoretical. It's not like the Imperial College model on deaths in the United States, you know, getting to over 2 million. I mean, this is just very straightforward. If we don't have farms that are receiving revenue, the state will produce X amount of food. If we have no economy, the state will produce X amount of dollars. All of this together will create X amount of stuff for us to eat. And oh dear, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. This is how many calories we need as an institution the state will need in order to survive over the next 12 months. How do we achieve that?
Well, Bill Gates is now growing meat in a lab, so.
Yeah, I know, Gates Burgers. But, you know, I think that it's going to be difficult to make the transition to the artificial chemical world. I think that if that's really what they have in mind, then they should be forced to disclose it so people can actually see what they have in mind for in our future. Just like with his vaccines, you know, he's got these RNA vaccines in mind for. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you've looked at any of the research into them, this is just catastrophic in terms of the human race, because basically you're enabling, the oligarchs to change your genetic code. This is what these vaccines are designed to do, mm-hmm. to change your genetic code. Do you really trust these people to do that? I mean, with your children?
Well, they're the ones that, you know, they want to vaccine your kids before they even have an immune system.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and these are the ones that have never explained, you know, the health catastrophe of the children that have these high levels of vaccinations, you know, all of the autism, the diabetes, You know, the just the there's so many things that are going wrong with these kids, and there's no explanation. That they, you know, this idea of like, well, it's just like male sperm counts going down 60% in 40 years. It's just the result, Tim, of living in an industrial world.
Yeah, the in a sense, they're correct, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. With, in your industrial world.
In your industrialized. I mean, right. I think in the 1970s, autism was, I think, globally one in every 10,000. And yep. Now it's one in 100 globally. One in like 45 in New Jersey.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and so...
And they claim, then they claim it's genetic.
Yeah, I know. It started in 1939, you know, so that was when the genes changed them out. Well, the problem is that they want to do this.
Yeah.
They have all of this technological and financial and media power, and there's just this large lump of the population that is completely blue sky and are thought puppets. I mean, they're the ones that are happy to have the masks on and be social distancing. Because it makes them feel safe.
Yeah.
And there are people like that. In fact, unfortunately, it's a lot of them. So our work is really cut out for us because that group we have to penetrate somehow. You know, and now hunger is a great motivator, but by that time you wonder, well...
You don't want to get to that point because politics becomes really irrational at that point.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think in most of the world, the hunger is not far away. I really wonder about that. I was trying to get some expert opinion on it. I couldn't. But I'm betting, if I had a guess, I would say 60 days. You'll start seeing mass starvations. And then once it starts, it will spread because you'll just work your way up basically the economic food chain from the poorest toward the richest. And, you know, I don't know how long the process is going to take, but it won't take a decade, certainly. You know, there will be starvation in the United States if we don't turn our economies back on a couple years. I mean, how long? What would your guess be, Tim? I don't think it's going to be 5 or 6 years.
If something doesn't turn around in the spring, you're going to see sporadic food shortages in the United States. You know, probably by the summer, early fall.
That'd be my guess too.
They're already limiting meat sales at stores, one per visit. You can get more if you want, but I think this was created. They floated that with the Smithfield plant and the COVID. Again, I don't see the outbreak as really being real, at least not in the sense that they've portrayed it. So when I hear a report of plants shutting down because of COVID-19, I call BS on it. I think this is an attempt to create shortages. This has been done in the past. You create a food riot for a political reason. You create food shortages. You know, and it's and I could see them, you know, this is how they impose austerity and cut the caloric intake of the masses and have a not so soft kill, because I don't think starving to death is soft. And you know, and you, if you have suffer from malnutrition, you'll be more susceptible to diseases, and then they'll have more viruses to solve that. I mean, sorry, more vaccines to solve that problem. You know, I never heard Bill Gates talk about diet, by the way, about promoting health. For him, health always comes at the end of a syringe. It's not what you eat. How you live? It's what pharmaceutical drug you take.
It is. It's just an amazing lump of evil, you know, that he can even with a smile and a straight face peddle this stuff. I mean, yeah. He's a lifetime actor, so I guess he's trained. But
well, this is why right now it's critical to see these protests, revolts, whatever you call them, simply just ignoring the authority of an illegitimate state at this point. Because these governors that are doing this are agents of a foreign interest. What I mean by that is they're representing the interests of the World Health Organization, which is a UN organization, which is bought out by Bill Gates, and that whole cabal, you know, is the Rockefeller Rothschild outfit. That's what the UN is.
That's right. I was on this other interview, and I was saying that, you know, because they were questioning the idea of aggressive citizen civil disobedience. And I said, look, look, there is no rule of law because there is no social contract anymore. I mean, the social contract requires the political class to abide by the Constitution. When they breach the Constitution without even any kind of process at all, when Gavin Newsom just actually... Because when he says science made me get rid of the right of assembly, basically, right? He's saying the Constitution is breached. I breached it because my understanding of science is greater than the
public. Okay, yeah. That's his admission of guilt.
Right, but that is an admission of guilt.
Just like when the New Jersey governor said, when he was asked about by Tucker Carlson, what gave him the authority to suspend the Bill of Rights, and he said it's above my pay grade.
Yeah, way above his pay grade. But you know, but the thing is that so Newsom, you know, when he replaced the Constitution with science, he breached the Constitution. But remember, that has influence and effect upon the citizens, because in the social contract, we're supposed to basically not revolt, not simply because the government has guns to shoot us with, but because we agree to abide underneath the Constitution with the inalienable rights that are granted to us.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, since there are no more inalienable rights, right, religion, free speech, and assembly being right at the top of the list, we don't have to worry about any kind of moral issue in terms of our behavior. I mean, there isn't any. I mean, right now in California, and of course, bear in mind, this is actually quite literally true because we have very few courts that are functioning. The courts are shut down. I mean, really what you have is a street gang. I mean, if you look at Newsom, just you know, from afar, this whole thing. I mean, he's become basically a tyrant with the Praetorian Guard. You know, he's got weapons that he's able to keep people intimidated with, and that's,
and that's
it.
And that's the same with Gretchen Whitless, or
yeah.
the
yeah.
wicked witch of the Midwest. You know, but yeah. but also you know, here in Virginia, Cuomo, New York. You know. You know, a Pritzker in Illinois, who's a, you know, comes from a corrupt banking family. So this is the type of people that these are corrupt political figures who've kind of wormed away in their office, and they're always kind of irrelevant to most people. That's politics, but because that's they could play their political game, but you could eat at night and go to bed and go to work in the morning and come home and eat again. But now they're preventing that from happening. So now it's the long train of abuses, and the tendency is to sort of tolerate those abuses, but there comes a time when they're no longer intolerable, that they're no longer tolerable, and the government must be changed. And I would argue that by simply ignoring these orders, you have effectively nullified the government in a peaceful, moral, and ultimately a constitutional manner.
Well, I mean, the public are actually under the Constitution. It's their inalienable right.
They haven't breached it. The government has.
Right. In fact, we also have the right of self-defense, and that's defense against starvation as well as, you know, vaccination.
Well, think about it. You get a governor with a crappy little executive order telling you, but I ordered you to starve to death.
Yeah.
Go to hell. No.
Yeah, exactly right. And well, and in fact, what I was saying is it's just the opposite.
Why don't you stay home?
what I was in the interview I was doing, I was saying it's just the opposite. I was saying the citizen has the obligation to defend the Constitution. If you want to look at where the social contract can actually start to be repaired, it starts with the citizen taking power and saying, government breached the Constitution. The government is illegitimate. We are going to get rid of the government, and we will reestablish the inalienable rights of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And that includes, of course, a state government. But the one we have now has breached it. When Newsom says, look, it's science that made me take away the right of assembly. I mean, at that moment, they're just isn't any legitimacy to his political power. There is no legitimacy. He has breached the Constitution. There was no process. There was, because if there had been a process, at least you could say, well, you know, we got to have input. There was no process. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, there's a crisis. I'm acting. Constitution is out the window. No, I'm sorry. The rights are inalienable. He doesn't have power.
You cited a crappy model, you used crappy inputs or numbers to stir up a panic so you could effectively seize emergency power before, you know, the public could organize resistance and have a real debate about it. And they did that all across the country. And it reveals the global octopus that we're living under, because this happened uniformly. You have to ask yourself, I interviewed Patrick Wood earlier this week. He talked about, you know, them pulling the plug in the economy. And you have to ask yourself, who has the authority to do that, the power to do that?
Yeah, and that you see that that it goes to the Freemasonic takeover of the political system that occurred in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen to Webster Tarpley talk about Palmerston Zoo, mm-hmm. and how in every single capital, all throughout Europe, all throughout North America, there were squads of Freemasons that were set up and financed, you know, vis-a-vis the central banking and the lodge system, for just this express purpose of seizing control.
Yeah.
And so now you look at all of these weird secret societies that are, you know, that produce our political class. Well, this is all we're seeing. We're just seeing a secret society basically trying to maneuver for more physical control over the population. I mean, that's all this is, you know, just so. There's various names for the organization. They wouldn't call it just one thing. You have the Freemasons, B'nai B'rith, you know, Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones. It just goes on and on. But these are all the Round Table. You know, these are all just names and terms that they use to create little clusters of their, you know, of the organization. So, you know, the public, you know, we are going to act in righteousness, right? I mean, we are, you know, we are attempting to reestablish the rule of law here. And so the media that they have that will continue to try to, you know, maintain control over thought puppets, well, good luck to them, because I don't think that many people are going to be buying this, you know, as the hunger starts coming forward. So this is, I know it's, this is going to be, we're going to be in for some very rough times, but we have to organize ourselves and keep our spirits high, because this is when the fight's actually going to be engaged. I mean, and it's going to be, to a large extent, an information battle. We have to get a large fraction of the thought puppets to actually realize they're in danger.
Yeah.
From the government, you know, from the government. And those government entities, you know, that are actually, you know, still amazingly, you know, for the people, we have to defend them with our lives. You know, you can't let them just get, you know, assassinated, you know, for basically trying to defend the people. So, you know, this is, you know, got to have your spirits up and got to get ready for the fight, because it's on top of us now. There's nowhere to, you know, can't avoid it or pretend it's not. You know, something is going to happen later on, and, you know, I'll just accept my life. And I know the New World Order is coming, but, you know, until comfortable, I'm just going to enjoy myself. And, you know, that's for another generation to worry about. And it can't do it anymore, Tim. It's on top of us. We got, you know, we could be all starving to death in 12 months if we don't act now.
Yeah, this is why the first stage would be just applying pressure to remove the lockdown. So economic sure. activity can return, and then work on, again, informing the public and sort of delegitimizing the entire operation.
We have to
calling
show
out
them,
the calling out the fraud.
Show them that they never produced the analysis of the starvation and the effects of the economic shutdown, because that was the plan, and they wanted to keep it hidden. Because it is going to be completely obvious that people like Newsom and Cuomo, that they're that, you know, the Imperial College statistical team, you know, everyone knew there was going to be a very horrible effect upon the people from the shutting down of the economy. And anyone who brought forward the fear porn but didn't bother to tell the public about the starvation certainty problem, they are guilty either directly, right, of being either part of the oligarchic class or on the payroll, or having created a mission so egregious that they really have breached, you know, all of the standards of either the media or the political class. They have to be removed. Whatever they were doing, they have to be gone, because you cannot make a blunder that will kill so many hundreds of millions of people and expect no consequences to you personally.
Well, Bill Clinton, I mean, Bill Gates has his seed vault, so.
Yeah, well, he better keep his plants available.
Buried, it was some, like some sort of like buried in a fjord somewhere?
I think it's like above the Arctic Circle. It's like, no, I'm serious. That's, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen it, but
well,
I was just sorry.
I think it was a YouTube from ABC News about Gretchen Whitmore's press conference talking about her trying to extend the order as much as possible, and that, you know, the controversy in Michigan. And a positive sign is I looked at all the comments. They actually allowed a comments on this. Usually they take down comments. All of them were just, you know, just lambasting and attacking her as being a witch and, you know, being stupid and evil.
Exactly. And they don't, and it isn't just because that's where they should be. The public shouldn't be, we need to do analysis. Look, that phase is behind us.
Yes.
I mean, Gavin Newsom said we'd have 25 million infected people in California. And when he said infected, he wasn't talking about, you know, asymptomatic. He was talking about sick people, mm-hmm. right? We've had 2,000 deaths in a state with 40 million people. We've had our economy locked down for 2.5 months. So this is not, I mean, and the idea this is science, I mean, this is, the public has had it. I think enough of the thought puppets are getting it. I don't know this for a fact. If they don't have it now, believe me, in a month they will. Because, you know, at this point, it doesn't take much to see the future, does it, Tim? The future is completely clear if we don't turn this around quickly.
Well, how long ago was it when they had that recall for Gray Davis?
It was 20-something years ago, yeah. But California, I mean, certainly...
Demographically, it's changed. I know that, so...
But still, I mean, you know, the majority of the people at the beach were Latinos. They mm-hmm. don't like Gruesome Newsome any more than mm-hmm. sunbathing Anglos, you know. So believe me, he has no constituency. I mean, the guy is Pelosi's nephew, for God's sakes. He comes from the most oligarchic, corrupt family circle imaginable, funded by the Gettys, who are, of course, in bed with the Rothschilds. I mean, this is our Gruesome Newsom's background, you know. And so he has no constituency. He's just a lifetime actor that got put into office. No one knows him like me. He's just nothing, you know, just... We just put up with these people because they're not supposed to do anything except be incompetent. That's what Californians are used
yeah.
to in their political class, you know. And now suddenly he's all of a sudden he's all everywhere with his science. Now he has he doesn't have any, you know, depth of connection to the California people. He has nothing. So it would be easy to remove him from office, which would be a great act. And I've been trying to get this going.
Yeah, it would be he'd be a great sacrifice because that would set the precedent.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and also because it would be public. I mean, mm-hmm. this is the thing, is that if you could get it into the public where you'd force mainstream media to cover like a debate between Gruesome and the new, you know, California candidate for governor, or even if you had a popular candidate to replace him, he would have the bully pulpit. He'd be able to make, you know, declarations. And then you could expose Newsom's science as not just, you know, weakly reasoned, but as deliberate cover and lies just to create the starvation.
Which action star would replace him? Like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger replaced Gray.
You have to make that transition to thinking.
No, I'm saying if you have a recall, though, who would you have go against? Would it be Vin Diesel or who's a current action star?
I think probably Vin Diesel would be a great candidate.
The Rock. The Rock.
Or The Rock. I mean, for heaven's sake, you know, I mean, he's maybe a little too intellectual for Californians. But, you know, we could, I'm sure we could come up with someone, but it really doesn't matter. As long as that person could make the case that, well, this doesn't look like stupidity. This looks like a plan, maybe. That's all we need.
That's the next stage, because above the immediate political reaction would be some payback politically, you know, either in terms of a recall, impeachment, or just the next election would be... call it COVID-19 truth, where you establish what we talked about last week, whereas you establish connection between Gates and all these organizations which justified or promoted the lockdown or gave the advice to the government to impose the lockdown, and you can make the case of all these figures have a direct ties back to Gates, and his foundation stood to the trust which backs the foundation stood to gain greatly financially from the lockdown. Not to mention, you know, his his future, you know, for humanity, and you could prove the conspiracy, and I like to see a criminal investigation on this.
We don't need a lot of them. All we need is one. Mm-hmm. If we can get one criminal trial going on, that would bring the idea of a planned, basically destruction of the economy for the purpose of weakening the public somehow. Mm-hmm. You know. Them starve, making them need vaccines. If we could just show through all of these connections, like in a RICO kind of situation where there's just too many connections to ignore, and you could show that Gates basically is running a gangster organization with the idea of ultimately selling his vaccines to everybody, that would be all we'd need. Just one of those, bring the idea to life. If the idea is, if the mainstream media has to bring the idea out, that, you know what, this is being, there is an accusation that this was deliberate, that the virus was really just a cover story, and that really what they're trying to do is starve everybody and make everybody sick and weak and need vaccines and eat the Impossible Burger.
Well, I mean, you've heard what's been revealed is this research with the coronavirus was outsourced out to China by Fauci at the NIH. Through University of North Carolina, $3.7 million was spent to do research into a function or gain of function research into the virus itself. Now, to me, that's you know, no one's asked Fauci that question.
Of course, and you see,
wait a second.
Trial, this could come out.
Yeah,
you don't even have to win the trial. You don't. All you have to do is get these ideas into the mainstream media and the thought puppets, because that's really what I'm thinking about. It's just to put the fear of basically evil, the fear of actually organized evil as a possibility, I think their minds will reorganize almost overnight.
Yeah,
and
the fact
wait a second, you know, this looks really very possible. And now when you have a few thought puppets that start making the transition just to fear of it, then you can't run someone like Gruesome Newsom. Someone who has no connection into the public, because people will be starting to pay attention. Mm-hmm.
And ask why Gates had the foresight to get a patent on the coronavirus.
Yeah, I wonder why. He's a genius, Tim. He's a genius. Oh. He's just amazing. He made DOS. So my gosh, and IBM. They create. He's a genius. You just can't. And he's also a health expert now. Suddenly.
Yeah, he's a health expert, a genius, and.
As always, Tim, the odds are against us, but the people in righteousness are with us, and we just need to get the information out, to just get it to spread a little bit. I honestly believe we're close to kind of a tipping point, because all you'd need to do is to transition the resistance elements against the lockdown, to unify them and get them to have the idea this is evil, that this isn't just government overreaching. This is organized evil we're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah. And getting the sheriffs and the local governments to say, wait a second, we're not going to follow your orders. And that's that. And you need that to happen in all these states.
Yeah, because that creates the opportunity for these organizations to get moving, we have to take our masks off so we can talk to one another.
Well, although, I mean, you could make a case, you could get a federal judge to put an injunction against all these orders as a violation of due process, the Bill of Rights, violation of the Constitution, because the Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government in every state, and that's been vitiated by these governors. That would be a top-down approach. I mean, after all, if the 14th Amendment gives you a right to abortion or to gay marriage, it certainly gives you the right to go and earn a living. Right? I mean, you'd think, oh, no, you have a right. You can starve to death, but in the process of starving to death, you can have a gay marriage, you know. You could make that case. And again, you have a federal government which has interceded into the states to guarantee people's right to vote, and to integrate schools in these things, in the name of civil rights and these things. Well, these lockdowns aren't a violation of people's civil rights. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah, exactly. So, we can just move the public an inch, I think everything is there to just to go forward and to actually create a truly frightened constituency and frightened of evil, and then we can start making some political.
Well, yeah, create a situation now where these governors become frightened of the people, and that's what you want. You want government to be afraid of the people, not the other way around.
Yes, sir.
So, okay, Joe.
Tim, good talking to you, buddy. We'll get them next week.
Get some sunshine.
I'm going to be on the beach.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, All
right.
Enjoy the nice California weather. Bye-bye.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah. Talk to you soon.